this guy like didn't kill anybody. Do you know what I mean? Like
right, but right.
Like, but
he just benefited from it.
Right. Which is like,
it takes like a certain level of compartmentalization to be like, oh, my fortune is drenched in blood.
Hello, and welcome to Revel, a collection of Realm's comedies, dramedies, and rom-com oddities. My name is Rhoda. I'm a producer at Realm.
And I'm Pia Wilson. And I wrote If I Go Missing, Witches Did It.
Stay tuned after the episode for more discussion between me and Pia.
Stay tuned.
Here is episode 9 of If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It. We'll be back just after this.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Log, September 17th. I would have thrown Elise off the train if Kaleem and I hadn't done some moon scrying that suggested an unexpected and determined ally would join me in battle. She was unexpected and unwanted, and she would not stop talking even though I was trying to go over my spells to battle the coven. She told me she's been listening to my recordings from the summer. She's been trying to find me for weeks. Girl, what?
I can't believe it turned out to be this easy. This is fated.
She said the phrase, black woman, so often that I found myself checking to see if she was a really, really, really light-skinned sister herself. Nope. I know that everybody has some African DNA in them since we're all from Africa, but if there's more than 0.00001% African DNA in Elise, I'd be shocked. She's an ally with a capital A.
Brooke and Carmen tortured me in high school. No matter what I did, I wasn't accepted. When they did that spell and left me stuck in those high school memories, it was just the worst.
I felt sorry for her, for a second.
I want to help you fight them. It shouldn't be up to black women to save us. You all have done so much already. These witch bitches, as you called them, need to be stopped. I want to help you. Let's put my privilege to good use.
Do you know any magic? Because I don't think you can use white privilege in a fight with witches who also have white privilege. Most of them, anyway. She fell into a silence for the last 15 minutes of the train ride and the cab ride to Victor's house, which she insisted on paying for. I'm still coming to terms with my own magical powers, with being a witch bitch myself. The New York skeptic in me thinks I'm in a mental hospital somewhere, drooling on myself as Victor comes to visit me with his new wife, Carmen. Elise would be another patient.
Realm presents If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, Episode 9.
Victor was standing on the porch, smiling with his hand over his heart when we arrived. It's the same look he gets when we watch E.T., and E.T. and Elliot are saying goodbye, and they each say, "Ouch." Or when we're watching Shawshank Redemption, and Morgan Freeman's character finds Tim Robbins' character on the beach in Mexico, and they hug. Just before Victor took me in his arms and kissed me, he said,
"I'm so glad you're back, babe. If you ever feel like running away again, wake me up so we can run away together."
It was a good kiss, I'm not gonna lie. I almost forgot Elise was there until she cleared her throat.
"Oh, Elise. I didn't see you there."
When he said that, Elise got so pale I thought she was gonna disappear. "I've got something for you." It was a temporary tattoo with his birth chart. Of course it was enchanted with a protection spell that Kaleem had promised me couldn't be broken by the witch bitches.
"Not unless they have access to and can translate spells in Sanskrit from 1588 BC.
I didn't know what they had access to. Brooke did have the top of an Egyptian sarcophagus in her bedroom. Whatever. I couldn't worry about it. Victor and I are stronger together, except when it comes to fighting witches. I knew he was going to be a point of vulnerability for me, and that was eliminated when I applied the tattoo. Victor pretended to love it.
"Hey, babe."
Elise reached out and touched it. She pulled back her hand like she'd been zapped by a current. I didn't know if Kaleem and I had made the spell too strong or if Victor just needed protection from Elise. I decided to keep an eye on my unexpected ally in battle. I excused myself for a couple of minutes to put Great Uncle Felix's money back in the grandfather clock, minus a few $100 I needed to live. I looked at the time when I was finished, and the coven was going to be here soon. I had DM'd each of them to meet me at the planetary hour Kaleem calculated to be best for the spell work I was planning to do against them. I slipped a sleeping pill into Victor's drink, and it wasn't long before he was passed out on the couch. Elise was hemming and hawing over the ethics of that. I had debated it too, but I couldn't risk him being out there. Not only would his worldview be shook, but he could actually get hurt in the magical crossfire. "You can stay back here and watch over him if you want. They'll be here soon." Elise looked Victor over and kissed him on the cheek, even though she knew it would sting. If I hadn't been there, she probably would have kissed him on the mouth. She says she knows Victor from high school. They must not have been close at all, because anybody who really knows Victor knows he hasn't had a white girlfriend since sophomore year of high school. She had no chance, even if I was out of the picture. "I can't protect you."
"I'm here to support you, Jenna."
She thought about it for a minute, shook her head, and then she thrust her chest forward as if she was ginning up some courage through body movement. "What's your sign, Elise?"
"Pisces."
I grabbed a magic marker from the kitchen and drew the symbol for Pisces on her arm, with the words, "I believe," underneath the marking. That's the motto of the Pisces. I charged the sign with a blessing. It was the least I could do if she was going to follow me blindly out to the fight. I hear the coven's cars pulling up. I've gotta go.
Brooke, Carmen, Mommy Megan, and BB are wearing black tunic dresses and braided gold belts as they face off against me and Jenna in the land behind Great Uncle Felix's house. I stand with my right side slightly forward because Jenna drew that wonderful tattoo on my forearm, and I wanted the coven to really get a full visual on that. I feel like I'm with Wyatt Earp at the OK Corral. Does that make me Doc Holliday? I do wish Jenna and I had coordinated outfits. There's gotta be some power in it, like how bridesmaids' dresses at a wedding give more power to the bride by emphasizing her white dress. Something like that. Brooke speaks first. Is that a weak move? Or is it a show of strength? Oh gosh, I wish I knew more military history.
I should have watched those Civil War movies with my father like he'd asked.
I knew you were going to be trouble the minute we first met you.
Apparently she quote-unquote read it. I don't know if all witches are psychics, but each witch here seems to be. So interesting. Burke goes on to say that they tried being nice to Jenna at first, thinking that with the right direction, she could even become a member of their coven. I was incredulous. You call your behavior toward Jenna nice?
This is your backup?
Carmen asks Jenna, mildly gesturing to me. Even now, as she's showing disdain for me, Carmen is stunning. Bibi says in a low smoker's voice,
I told you all we shouldn't have come here.
I wonder what she means. Brooke tells her that they had no choice. Jenna has crossed a line in messing with their businesses. They had no choice but to do away with her, no matter where they had to do it. Meanwhile, Jenna hasn't said a word. Her body is tense, the way mine is just before I'm about to hit a ball served by my tennis instructor. Her beautifully wide brown eyes scan the women. Is she reading them? Or is she casting a spell already? Her lips aren't moving, though. Maybe she's reserving her power.
We can't let you tell the world about us, Jenna. And we can't let you continue to screw with our income. I told you what was at stake.
Mommy Megan says, stepping forward and moving her arms in a way that suggests she's grooming a big ball of energy that I can't see. I wonder if the others can see what Megan's ball of energy looks like. Is it golden? Green? Red? Whatever it is, she throws it in Jenna's direction, which Jenna apparently blocks by bending a moonbeam with what looks like an antique silver hand mirror. It's interesting. I can see some of Jenna's magical energy. Maybe because of the marking she made on my arm? It burns a little. I imagine that's because it's protecting me from Megan's blow. Not waiting for the other witches to strike, Jenna pulls down the energy of the moon. To me, it looks like she's pulled the moon out of the sky and hit the coven with it. For the first time ever, the smirk is wiped off of Brooke's face. I'm fairly certain I see fear there. She pretends otherwise.
Kid gloves off.
All of the coven starts throwing their energy, while Jenna is making missiles out of stars. Some of the coven's magic is emotional manipulation, fear and despair. I know this because I can feel it. Not as much as I would without Jenna's protection, I think, but I can feel some of it. I can tell Jenna is feeling it too because I see a few tears leaking out of her eyes. I have to give her some reprieve. If you ever want to get a reservation at a decent restaurant in this city again, I suggest you back up. Even as I'm saying it, I'm questioning it, but it seems to make Bibi hesitate a little bit. So, I keep going. If any of you ever want to step foot in the Colony Club, turn around right now and leave Jenna alone. Otherwise, one call to my grandmother and you won't even be admitted as a guest. Bibi puts her hands down, about to retreat, when Jenna hits them all with a gigantic wave of energy from Mars. It's blood red. I only know it's Martian energy because Jenna said something about the warrior planet, and Mars is the Roman god of war.
Enough!
Brooke yells, her eyes turning as black as her tunic. Jenna looks at me and tells me to run. I would if I could. I'm frozen. Carmen's eyes turn black, and Mommy Megan's too, like it's some kind of contagious disease. Baby's eyes begin to change, and then revert back to form. She backs up, and before she follows through on her retreat, she looks at me and says,
Give your father my regards.
I look over to Jenna. She's on her knees. Whatever the remaining trio is doing is taking its toll on her. I start hurling threats.
That product of yours will never be featured in another fashion magazine by the time Sabine is done with you. Brooke, you'll never get that Vogue cover no matter how much you masturbate. Sabine has a direct line to Anna Wintour.
I mean, I hate name dropping, but it has to be done. I don't have anything to threaten Mommy Megan with, but I'm fairly certain that if the other two fall, she couldn't take on Jenna by herself.
Shut up before I rip out your tongue,
Brooke says to me, and I begin to feel my throat closing up.
Ancestors, I call upon you!
And that makes Carmen gasp. I get goosebumps. A figure comes out of the woods. A specter with a beautiful aura of white light around her. She looks just like Jenna. Oh my God! Colonial Jenna is real! Brooke, Carmen, and Megan are dragged backwards against their will. Their shoes dig tracks in the ground. Colonial Jenna extends a hand to my Jenna. Modern Jenna. I start crying with joy as modern Jenna stands. Oh, this is all so lovely. I feel overwhelmed. Together, the Jennas bring Brooke, Carmen, and Megan to their knees.
I want you to know that I would never let any true harm come to you. I waited a long time for you to come. I was chased by townsfolk for being a witch. They wanted to hang me. I ran to Richardson Land looking for help. My predators caught me before I could find a Richardson. The townsfolk hung me back there on the oak. A Richardson found me and cut me down. I used my last breath to bless them in their land with a union of our lines.
I am ugly crying at this point. Everyone just looks like a big blur. Does this mean Jenna is pregnant? Oh, I'm sure Victor would be thrilled. He gets a baby with the woman he loves while fulfilling his family's destiny. Hell of a day for a man who's sleeping on the couch. What do I get?
What shall be their fate?
Colonial Jenna asks, waving her hand in front of Brooke, Carmen, and Mommy Megan.
It was witches like them who betrayed me to the townsfolk.
Modern Jenna whispers to Colonial Jenna, who glances in my direction. Oh no, what's wrong? What could I have done? Goodbye, cruel world. Everything fades to black.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it.
Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Log, March 6th. I read in the news that they were canceling South by Southwest because of the coronavirus. First time in the festival's 34-year history that it's been canceled. It was the right thing to do. But I feel sad at the same time. I'm supposed to be on a panel talking about my soon-to-be-published book, The Woman, the Witch, and the Capitalist. It's my first piece of quote-unquote fiction. When Colonial Jenna asked me what we should do to Brooke, Carmen, and Mommy Megan, part of me wanted them to lose everything. They had really put me through it, and I was sure that if Colonial Jenna hadn't come through, those witch bitches would have made sure I was destroyed on every level. Who knows, they might have done worse. But one thing had stuck out to me in Colonial Jenna's story. She said it was her fellow witches who had outed her. I was planning to do the same to the influencer coven. I figured we could call it even. Colonial Jenna liked that. Together, we did a spell to edit the memories of everyone directly and indirectly involved. Even people tangentially involved, like Divine and her clerk of the 13th house, thought they were meeting me for the first time when we saw each other later that year. Bibi officially left the coven, even selling her house in Bedford. I guess she decided to operate the old-fashioned way, making deals on golf courses and clubhouses. Her company even made a bid to publish my book. My agent was excited. I took it as an apology. Her departure from the coven forced the remaining three to really focus on their prosperity magic. They didn't have the power to do any bitchy side magic, and I don't know that they wanted to anymore. Both Carmen and Megan sent me congratulatory notes about my book. When I finally got the nerve to look at their feeds again, I saw that there were no more pictures of them post-sex magic orgasms around Carmen's fire pits. Victor thought we had a very high and drunken summer, so much so that he decided to abstain from both when we went back to Greenpoint in the late fall. I wonder sometimes if there's a small part of him that remembers that I went missing. He holds my hand a lot more, and we don't fight as much. He's changed, much more thoughtful. But then that might be because I've changed. Turns out, being a naturally powerful celestial witch really boosts your self-confidence. The night of the fight, I didn't have time enough to get Elise back to the city, so I took her to Fell's restaurant and set her up with a bunch of tapas and a half bottle of wine. She wasn't quite sure how she got to the restaurant, but she was sure that she was in town looking for gossip. Last I heard, she and Fell were dating on and off. It made me a little disappointed in Fell to hear that, but I guess her pedigree mattered more than her personality. I decided to change that as well. Well, tweak it. I asked Kaleem to help me come up with a spell to make Elise be the amazing anti-racist super feminist ally she thinks she is. At least she wants to be. Speaking of Kaleem, he was happy when I told him what Colonial Jenna said about me and Victor's lines crossing.
You see, like I told you, he's the earth to your sky.
He said, handing me Victor's chopped cheese and my coffee. I still haven't told Kaleem that I use prosperity magic to help me write and sell my book. The same thing I had given the influencer coven shit for. I barely acknowledge it to myself. But now I feel like the whole world is paying for my desperate magic. I think I threw everything out of balance and left us all open to this global pandemic. I tell myself to fuck off because that sounds really self-centered. But I was manipulating a lot of energy, and that has consequences.
There's a flow to the magical energy throughout the universe. Yes, magical energy. All energy is magical energy, if you ask me. When we fuck around with it, taking shortcuts that aren't the right shortcuts for us, we throw the flow off course. Lots of little throws can cause catastrophe. What if I was the throw that broke the world's back? That thought keeps me up at night. Of course, I'm doing every spell I can think of to set the magical energy right. I haven't succeeded yet. I can't help but wonder if it's all the stress and bad juju that's floating through the air. I have wondered if the world is shutting down because, on some level, I'm scared to succeed. Your energy is written into every spell. You need to be 100% clean when you cast. Subconscious intentions can bring down the world's most powerful witches. Kaleem argues with me about this, but I think everyone is a witch on some level. Nothing gets made without an intention. We don't go anywhere or do anything without an intention. We're creating our lives every day. Kaleem says I think that because I'm a natural-born celestial witch.
Regular people have access to magic. Women like the ones in the coven you encountered can take that basic magic and experiment with it and practice crafting spells to grow power. Mind you, they still need a coven to amplify their power. Only hereditary witches like you can wield it on a worldwide scale alone.
I don't know. Maybe he's right. I wonder if another witch or coven of witches is wielding their power right now. Somebody always profits from disaster. Prosperity witches. Damn.
And we're back. Once again, I'm Rhoda Baeza, a producer here at Realm, and I'm here with the writer of If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, Miss Pia Wilson. Very excited to talk to you, Pia, about the finale. So Jenna and Elise finally meet, right? Like they're face to face, and Elise is trying to convince Jenna that she can help with the final battle. And Jenna's response to this, it's so Jenna, it's, you can't use your white privilege in a fight with witches who also have white privilege.
With those people.
and it's just like a snappy-ass comeback, but then...
But she does.
Yes, it's such an incredible scene. Doesn't she, like, threaten that somebody, does. Like, won't be able to get reservations? Like, baby...
Go to a club?
Yeah, you'll never be able to eat it. This fancy French restaurant
such
ever again with like its fixed price.
You
like,
will never get in Vogue. My grandmother knows Anna Montoya.
No, I mean, you know, the whole series, I understood that Elise came from legacy wealth. I mean, obviously, right? You know, it's very right. clear. And yet, you know, when it culminates in that scene, like the things that she can do, you know, and it's like the power manifesting from her very right. fingertips. And you're like, well, fuck, that's money like, magic. You know what I mean? That's like old money magic.
That's her, exactly. that's her power. That's her influence, right? Like, and I know some people like that. Like, you wouldn't know from talking to them until you get to know them a little better. And they'll be like, yes, my grandfather founded blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
you're like, what?
Dude, yeah. I met a guy when I lived in New York, and he was like a descendant of one of the founding fathers. And I just like, I didn't yeah. know how to process the amount of wealth that had like accumulated in that time. Through blood. And I, you know what I mean? And then, like, yeah. And then I have this, like, kind of complicated, like, unwinding where I'm like, well, you know, this guy, like, didn't kill anybody. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But
right.
Like, but
he just benefited from it.
Right. Which is like.
It takes, like, a certain level of compartmentalization
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to be like, oh, my fortune is drenched in blood. But that's okay, because
mm-hmm.
I'm a nice person. And we all do that to some extent, right?
Absolutely, like, yeah.
I'm an American, right? And I know that I have a certain amount of privilege, right, as an American.
Because
mm-hmm. I'll talk bullshit about America all day, because I have the right to, you know, like. But
there are parts in the world where I'm an imperialist or that America's ruining things.
Absolutely. And I think about climate change a lot. And it's easy to justify not overthinking where you come from or like what you have because you're just like, well, I can't help it. I was like born into this. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then, but it's like, you know.
Not my fault.
Yeah. And then the gymnastics of it are just like, oh, I just like don't want to change my lifestyle. I still want to fly places and drive and like drink things out of disposable cups. And that's god awful.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like horrifying.
Right.
And like, and then,
right.
But even the gymnast.
Give me a bag.
Exactly. Yeah. But even like comparing this to, you know, billionaires, right? Like me flying to New York to see my friends versus like kind of somebody who has accumulated $1 billion of wealth through genocide. It's crazy, right? You know what I mean? And like these, yes, the compartmentalizing is real. It's very real.
Yeah, because you can't let them off the hook because their level of wealth is just obscene. At a certain point, you have to say, we're going to take a few billion away from you.
Yes.
Let's just wipe that interest off your checkbook and we're going to recirculate
yeah.
that.
And that is a wrap on If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It. Thank you again, Pia, for taking the time to chat with me. And thanks so much to all of you for listening to Revel. Our next show is The Co-Founder. It's about two young startup co-founders, both women of color, on the brink of losing their company, a fate they narrowly avoid thanks to a harebrained scheme to have their neighborhood barista, a white dude, of course, pretend to be the third co-founder in order to raise money. I'll be hosting with Caitlin West, the audio producer and director of the show. Can't wait, and see you then. If you've enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate, review, and share it with friends. You can listen ad-free by joining Realm Unlimited at realm.fm or Realm Plus on Apple Podcasts. You can also find more shows like this one by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Revel is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepherd. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Audio editing by Kaylin West and Sam Bagala. Theme music by Hashem Asadollahi, featuring performances by Hashem Asadollahi, Josiah Lamb, Alan Ferber, and Mike Forzano. Theme music mixed by Justin Morell. Cover art by Jenny Cheng. This season of Revel is hosted by Rhoda Baeza and Pia Wilson. You're listening to Revel, If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It. Created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.
If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It is a Realm original production, created and written by Pia Wilson. Produced by Rhoda Baeza and Haley Wagreich. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Directed by Amanda Rose Smith and Kaylin West. Starring Gabourey Sidibe, Sarah Natacheni, Aaron Landon, Len Klingeman, Tony D, Alba Ponce de Leon, Tiana Camacho, Jordan Bielski, Eli Gonzalez, and Andrew Lee. Sound design, mixing, and mastering by Fred Greenhalgh. Additional editing by Corey Barton. Theme music by Hashem Asadollahi and Andrew Rowan. Cover art by Kendall Thomas. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadollahi.